taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. Today, I want to talk about religious liberty. I want to start from an article I wrote talking about a recent Supreme Court case involving foster parents in foster child agencies in the city of Philadelphia and their attack against Catholic social services for actually upholding the standards of the Catholic religion.
What is the role of government in enforcing societal norms? Does the state have the legal power to force compliance with its preferred worldview? A religious freedom case pitting the city of Philadelphia against Catholic social services has had its day at the Supreme Court. While the court correctly found for Catholic social services, the details prove that judges and lawyers at all levels, well, they have serious comprehension problems when it comes to reading the Constitution of the United States. For those of you not familiar with the details of Fulton et al. V. City of Philadelphia, let me quote from the syllabus of the court's opinion. Quote, Philadelphia's foster care system relies on cooperation between the city and private foster care agencies. The city enters standard annual contracts with the agencies to place children with foster families. One of the responsibilities of the agencies is certifying prospective foster families under state statutory criteria. Petitioner, Catholic Social Services, has contracted with the city to provide foster care services for over 50 years, continuing the centuries-old mission of the Catholic Church to serve Philadelphia's needy children. CSS holds a religious belief that marriage is a sacred bond between a man and a woman. Because CSS believes that certification of prospective foster families is an endorsement of their relationships, it will not certify unmarried couples regardless of their sexual orientation or same-sex married couples. But other foster care agencies in Philadelphia will certify same-sex couples, and no same-sex couple has ever sought certification from CSS. The city of Philadelphia contracts with several agencies to place children with foster families. One of these agencies is Catholic Social Services, referred to as CSS for the remainder of the opinion. What should be a surprise to no one is that CSS, being under the Roman Catholic Church, holds a Roman Catholic view of marriage and families. For this reason, CSS will not place children with unmarried or same-sex married couples. The court notes that CSS is not the only foster care agency that the city of Philadelphia contracts with, some of whom will place children with same-sex couples. Quote, against this backdrop, a 2018 newspaper story recounted the Archdiocese of Philadelphia's position that CSS could not consider prospective foster parents in same-sex marriages. Calls for investigations follow, and the city ultimately informed CSS that unless it agreed to certify same-sex couples, the city would no longer refer children to the agency or enter a full foster care contract with it in the future. The city explained that the refusal of CSS to certify same-sex married couples violated both a non-discrimination provision in the agency's contract with the city, as well as the non-discrimination requirements of the citywide Fair Practices Ordinance. Everything was fine until an article came out pointing out that the Archdiocese of Philadelphia refused to let CSS consider same-sex married couples as potential foster parents. Remember, according to the court, no same-sex couple had ever asked CSS to foster a child with them, so no one has ever been refused anything. However, the article and subsequent calls for investigation by whom it is mentioned was sufficient for the city to inform CSS that unless they agreed to place children with same-sex couples, the city would no longer refer children to them. Why did the city of Philadelphia do this? They claimed it violated the non-discrimination provisions of both the contract the city had with CSS and the city's Fair Practices Ordinance. Now, Catholic Social Services and three affiliated foster parents sued to keep the city from enforcing its decision not to do business with them anymore, claiming it violated the Free Exercise Clause of the Constitution of the United States. The district court denied CSS's case, and the Third Circuit agreed, claiming both the contractual requirement and the city's ordinance were both neutral and generally applicable. CSS and the foster parents appealed to the Supreme Court, which held, quote, "The refusal of Philadelphia to contract with CSS for the provision of foster care services unless CSS agreed to certify same-sex couples as foster parents violates the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment." Let's start with this question of the First Amendment. This case cannot be a violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. The First Amendment states, quote, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." Congress did not create the Fair Practices Ordinance or the contractual requirements for foster care agencies. The city of Philadelphia did. Therefore, these actions are by the city, not Congress, and therefore do not fall under the restrictions of the First Amendment. They do, however, fall under the Constitution of Pennsylvania. Quote, "All men have a natural and indefeasible right to worship Almighty God according to the dictates of their own conscience. No man can of right be compelled to attend, erect, or support any place of worship, or to maintain any ministry against his consent. No human authority can, in any case whatever, control or interfere with the rights of conscience, and no preferences shall ever be given by law to any religious establishments or modes of worship." Since the Constitution of Pennsylvania prohibits interference with the rights of conscience, the laws of the city of Philadelphia cannot compel CSS to violate theirs. Now, what about those who do not wish to support a ministry of the Roman Catholic Church? Or what about the citizens of Philadelphia who do not wish to support ministries that discriminate against religious teachings? Both questions are moot, since no law can give preference to any religious establishment or mode of worship. Since faithful Roman Catholics believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that the best place for children to be raised is with a legally married couple, to deny them the opportunity to exercise their religion by the dictates of their own conscience would be to give preference to those religious establishments that do not hold to the same convictions. What about the neutral and generally applicable test? This test comes from an opinion authored by Justice Scalia in the case Employment Division v. Smith, referred to in the opinion simply as Smith. Quote, "Although a state would be prohibiting the free exercise of religion in violation of the clause if it sought to ban the performance or abstinence from physical acts solely because of their religious motivation, the clause does not relieve an individual of the obligation to comply with a law that incidentally forbids or requires the performance of an act that his religious belief requires or forbids if the law is not specifically directed to religious practice and is otherwise constitutional as applied to those who engage in the specified act for non-religious reasons." In the Smith case, which involved the denial of unemployment benefits for the use of peyote during religious ceremonies, Justice Scalia admitted that the state of Oregon was prohibiting the free exercise of the respondent's religion. But the justice said that it was okay because the law was not specifically directed at their religious practices. Hence, the neutral and generally applicable test is unconstitutional because the Constitution says Congress shall make no law, not shall make only neutral and generally applicable laws related to the freedom of religion. Based on the logic of Justice Scalia, both the state and federal governments can abridge your right to freely exercise religion as long as they didn't target only religious practices, a flagrant violation not only of the Constitution of the United States, but of Justice Scalia's oath of office. This is an excellent example of bad behavior indeed. Since courts today inflate their own opinions above the Constitution they've sworn or affirmed to support, we see Justice Scalia's mistake has expanded and grown to the point that some judges believe churches, well, they can be classified as non-essential and shut down in an emergency. Now, in the Fulton v. Philadelphia case, the court found that CSS's freedom of religion was abridged. Quote, "The city's actions burdened CSS's religious exercise by forcing it to either to curtail its mission or to certify same-sex couples as foster parents in violation of its religious beliefs." Now, the rest of the syllabus goes on to support their opinion with really egregious arguments. Not because the city of Philadelphia violated the Constitution of Pennsylvania's religious freedom clauses, nor because it denied Roman Catholics the equal protection of the law, a violation of the 14th Amendment. No, the only reason Justice Roberts used in the syllabus, and to which all of the other justices agreed in part or in whole, was that the city of Philadelphia's contractual requirements were not generally applicable. How did they find that? Quote, "The non-discrimination requirement of the city's standard foster care contract is not generally applicable. Section 3.21 of the contract requires an agency to provide services defined in the contract to prospective foster parents without regard to their sexual orientation. But Section 3.21 also permits exceptions to this requirement at the sole discretion of the commissioner. This inclusion of a mechanism for entirely discretionary exception renders the non-discrimination provision not generally applicable. Since exceptions to the contract requirements are, according to the court, at the sole discretion of the commissioner, they are not generally applicable. That means all the city of Philadelphia has to do is remove the exception from the language. And the Supreme Court says they can abridge the free exercise of CSS's religious beliefs all they want. As for the city's fair practice ordinance, the court said it did not apply because CSS did not meet the definition of a public accommodation under the law. So it appears Catholic Social Services of Philadelphia lives to foster another day. However, this victory is not based on the law, but the fickle opinions of a handful of judges. Not only has a court told the city of Philadelphia exactly what they need to do in order to compel CSS to consider same-sex couples for fostering or lose their contract, they have pulled the wool over the eyes of the American people. They have claimed they are upholding the rule of law while bringing in yet another Trojan horse full of judges claiming the power to overturn the Constitution based solely on what they think. This may be a victory for Catholic Social Services, but it is a Pyrrhic victory for the American people.
So why is this case so important? Not simply the outcome, but the basis by which the court came to its opinion. You see, it's one thing to say, yes, oh, it's wonderful, you know, Catholic Social Services can foster. That's great. But they're doing it solely because the court said, we accept this one. We allow this. As I said, the court even told the city of Philadelphia, listen, if you really want to shut CSS down, remove the exception. You remove the exception, we'll find it generally applicable, and you can infringe on their rights all you want. So why is freedom of religion, why is it so important? Why is religious liberty so important? I mean, sure, it's the first right protected, it's the first freedom protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution. Of course, that wasn't the first proposed, but that's a whole other discussion. No, you have to go back a little bit in history, and I want to introduce you to the Black Robe Regiment. Now, I'm curious, put in the comments, let me know how many of you have heard of the Black Robe Regiment. What is the Black Robe Regiment? That was the name that the British gave to the American patriots that both fought for in the American Revolution, but more importantly, argued for our liberty and our independence. It was the men in black robes who spoke boldly from the Word of God as it applied to everything in life. Not just spiritual matters, but things such as taxes, education, public policy, good government, military, anything the Bible addressed, they talked about. They educated the American people on the importance of fidelity to God and to the liberty that is part of the biblical structure. The idea that man is inherently evil, therefore there must be checks and balances so that no one person or no one group wields too much power. They taught about the rightness of taxation, the importance of education, the importance of having public policy that is right and good and honorable and moral. And it was from these sermons that many of the American founding fathers started to draw the idea of, you know what, we should be free to live that way. Remember, it was British law that slavery could not be outlawed in the American colonies. Yet it was the members of these Black Robe Regiment that taught on things like all men are created equal, that Jefferson used. It was one of the sources Jefferson used. This idea that governments are not the kingpin, that they get their just powers from the consent of the governed, that men and women have a conscience, and that conscience needs to be protected. You cannot violate a person's conscience. These men were so powerful, they were so moving in their oratory, that the British thought they might as well have been a military unit. And several of them did join the military. There were several pastors that actually fought for liberty. So in a way, you could say, if we did not have the Black Robe Regiment, if we did not have men willing and free to teach on what the Bible says, on the Word of God, and how it applies to absolutely everything, we would not be the free nation that we are today. Now think about that when you hear people saying that churches cannot talk, churches can't talk about politics. Why? Is it because it was a political issue before it was a biblical issue? Or is it because the politicians don't like the competition? Think about that. Lyndon Johnson came up with the Johnson Amendment to get nonprofits to stop picking on him. I mean, that basically, if you go into the history of it, he was getting beat up. Therefore, he wanted to basically stop these not-for-profits, including churches, from attacking his actions, from pointing out his mistakes. So he passed the Johnson Amendment. And many churches today now will not talk about certain things simply because government has said that's now political. Every year, a group of pastors gets together and specifically tries to violate the Johnson Amendment because they want it decided in court. Because the idea of muzzling pastors simply because something is considered political is the exact opposite of religious liberty. And it's exact opposite of the fertile soil that led to our liberty. So when you see a court case like this one with Catholic Social Services, even though Catholic Social Services, quote unquote, won, notice, they did not win because of religious liberty. They did not win because the city of Philadelphia was infringing on their right to freely exercise their religion, on their rights of conscience as protected by the Constitution of Pennsylvania. No, they won because the justices on the Supreme Court said, you know what? This doesn't infringe on everybody's rights, so it's not fair. Think about that for a second. That is the if you read the opinion, it was the reason they shot down Philadelphia's requirement was not because it infringed on the religious liberty of the Roman Catholics and the Catholic Social Services. It's because the exception clause made it not generally applicable. Now that, I don't know about you, that scares me. Because we are seeing today what the outcome is when a court finds non-constitutional methods of coming to a conclusion. I offer as evidence Masterpiece Cake Shop. Now, if you're not familiar with the case, the simple version is Masterpiece Cake Shop makes cakes. They sell cakes to absolutely everyone. They have no discrimination. However, the owner, Jack Phillips, refuses to make custom cakes for things that he cannot support, that violate his sincerely held religious beliefs. He has been targeted by what I refer to as the Rainbow Mafia, the homosexual and the transgender, because he will not bow and comply. Now, the first case against him had to do with the fact that he would not make, I believe it was a homosexual wedding cake. There are dozens of cake shops in Colorado that will do this. There were dozens of cake shops in that city. There are many cake shops that even offered to do it for free. But you see, that wasn't good enough. So this case went its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, you know what? The Colorado Civil Rights Commission, they were mean to Jack Phillips. Therefore, we're going to fine for Jack Phillips. They did not say that, Mr. Phillips, that you as a citizen have a right to not do business, to not create something that violates your beliefs, that you can be compelled to make something. They said the Colorado Civil Rights Commission showed an anti-religious bias, therefore they found for Masterpiece Cake Shop. And here is Jack Phillips, still, not again, still being sued. And guess what some of the lower courts have found? Well, this time the Colorado Civil Rights Commission did not publicly make blatantly anti-religious statements, therefore, yes, we can compel Jack Phillips to make cakes for things he despises, for things he doesn't believe. See, that's why these opinions are important. Not simply what the outcome is, but how the court got there. Religious freedom is not simply, you can still go to church. It is how honest believers live their lives. Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, Jew, it doesn't matter. You have the right to freely exercise your religion without coercion from government. In fact, the vaunted separation of church and state, which comes from a letter that Thomas Jefferson sent to the Danbury Baptists after his election, said that they didn't have to worry about the government interfering with them because the First Amendment raised a wall of separation between church and state. Separation of church and state means the church is protected from the state, not the massive nonsense we have today with the state can't even think about anything religious. So as we look at the Catholic social services, as we look at the upcoming Masterpiece Cake debacle, as we look at other cases, which I want to talk about later today, keep in mind when we're talking about freedom of religion, we're talking not simply about the ability to worship, but we're talking about your conscience, your ability to live your life according to your conscience until the point that you actually infringe on a right of somebody else. This is the importance of freedom of religion. The concept of freedom of religion is actually just as important for the atheist as it is for the Roman Catholic. See, if your conscience says there is no God, you need to be able to freely exercise that. Now, most people I hear, especially, and including those, you know, especially lawyers, and including those who were part of this case, look at freedom of religion and immediately jump to the First Amendment. Except they miss two very important points. First of all, the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. There is only one Congress in the United States. That is our national legislature. So unless Congress makes a law, it's not a First Amendment issue. Now, each and every state in their constitution has a Bill of Rights or a Declaration of Rights, and they protect freedom of religion. They do it in slightly different ways with slightly different language, but in general, they agree that you have a right to exercise your religion according to your conscience without interference from government. So most of these cases that I see brought that are First Amendment cases are actually not First Amendment cases. They are issues with, you know, the freedom of religion is a state constitution issue. What it is a 14th Amendment issue. It is equal protection under the law. But again, you know, since most lawyers don't actually study the Constitution, and since most judges don't study the Constitution, and since law school doesn't teach the Constitution when, you know, to their students, I'm not surprised. So that's why I wanted to take some time today. I want to talk about the concept of religious liberty, of freedom of religion, of the free exercise of religion. I want to look at its status today. How is it doing today in America? What can we see and what can we learn about this most cherished, or should be most cherished, of the freedoms protected by the Constitution? So we'll look at that a little deeper after the break. But before we go, I want to remind you that I've been using HealthyCell.com, their vitamins, for a while now. I truly like this. You know, vitamins, you know, this handful of pills you have to take, it's not pleasant. It's not fun. And let's face it, most of those vitamins haven't been dealt with. They haven't been upgraded. They haven't done anything with them since the 1930s. Well, HealthyCell has reinvented vitamins. They now come in these easy-to-use, travel-ready gel packs that you can get them for different needs of your body so that your body is healthy and your mind is healthy too. So you can try the REM Sleep, the Super Boost, or try the Focus and Recall. That's what I'm working on right now. The idea of taking your short-term focus and being able to get the job done, not be have your mind wandering all over the place. Help your brain do what it's designed to do. Give it the nutrition it needs. Gives it the vitamin it needs. And again, it's a simple gel pack. And since you're an America Out Loud listener, I have an offer for you. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, and they will give you 20% off your very first order. Now, I've been using this. My wife's been using it. We really like this product. I believe you will too. So again, head to healthycell.com/outloud. Get 20% off your first order. Again, try the Focus and Recall or try any of their products. And I'll be back right after this short break.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutloud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about religious liberty. This idea of not simply, you know, freedom of worship or freedom of religion, but this idea that not only can government not coerce you into participating in a religious faith, but they can't stop you. They can't stop you from acting on your conscience, whether that be religious based or not. The whole idea of freedom of exercise is what, you know, whatever your beliefs are, even if you believe that there's nothing to believe in, government can't prevent you from exercising that. We talked a little bit about what was going on in Philadelphia, but now I want to talk a bit of religious freedom in other places. You know, we talked about the Black Robe Regiment and the importance they had to the liberty of this country, the independence of this country. And as I look around, what do I see? I see that religious freedom that helped bring liberty to this country being squashed. So let's keep with the Roman Catholics. You may have heard that a group called the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops are drafting a document, and it revolves around a debate, and this has been a debate going on for years, whether or not Roman Catholic politicians who support abortion should receive communion. Now, I am not a Roman Catholic. I know several Roman Catholics. I've talked about these types of things with Roman Catholic friends of mine. But as I understand it, the Eucharist is an important religious symbol within the Roman Catholic Church. And the taking of the Eucharist, the taking of communion, is supposed to be done only by faithful Catholics. Now, if I'm wrong, please comment and let me know. But as I understand it, that's the basis. And the bishops are contending, or at least there's a debate among the bishops. Well, since the Roman Catholic Church says that abortion is a sin, how can someone support a sin and still be considered a Catholic in good standing, therefore eligible to take the Eucharist? Now, this is, to me, is an interesting internal debate. It's a religious freedom debate. What I found interesting were two stories. The first was this, pushback by President Biden. Now, President Biden claims to be a devout Catholic. I question that, not because of what he says, but because of what he does. Which, of course, brings up the question of the establishment of religion. See, does Mr. Biden as president have the ability to pressure a church as to who will receive its ordinances? That would be a violation of the First Amendment. If there was whatever law under which President Biden would claim the authority to do that would be a violation of the First Amendment. Then again, since he's Congress, if he just simply does it in his position, it's not technically a violation of the First Amendment. It just shows that President Biden doesn't really care about the free exercise of religion because he's saying you can't freely exercise your religion if you exclude me. Now, I understand the Roman Catholic point of view. You have a person who says that he is personally against abortion, but then signs several pro-abortion executive orders. I would refer to Mr. Biden to the book of James, where he says, you show me your faith, I'll show you my faith by my works. And sorry, Mr. Biden, your works don't match up with what you say. So that was interesting question number one, because now what you have is they basically are setting up a power struggle between the bishops of the Roman Catholic Church and President Biden, and oh, by the way, I believe Nancy Pelosi and several other fairly prominent members of the federal government. Does the Roman Catholic Church have the legal authority to exclude from a sacrament someone they've deemed not in good standing? Obviously, question number one. Question number two. So now the bishops, and apparently the vote, it was in mid-June, it was 168 bishops in favor of drafting this document, 55 opposed. So there's this push to draft this document. The other story I found interesting is the Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Georgetown. See, I believe that's the church that Biden frequents. And they've decided they're not going to get involved over what they describe as a, quote, political issue. So you're telling me that the Roman Catholic Church, at least the Holy Trinity Catholic Church, claims that giving the Eucharist is now a political issue. Why? Well, because it's being done based on whether or not you support abortion. Okay, I just have one question for whoever's in charge of the Holy Trinity Catholic Church. Which came first, Roe v. Wade or the Bible? It's a simple question. You see, if you read in the Bible, if you read in the Old Testament, they talk about children being left out and abandoned, an early form of, call it an abortion, post-birth abortion. We'll just leave them out to die. And it was actually Christians in the first two centuries that would collect these babies left out to die and care for them. So Holy Trinity Catholic Church is not the Ten Commandments. Did the Ten Commandments come before Roe v. Wade or not? Because the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not take innocent life, which is exactly what abortion does. You see, it's not the bishops making this a political issue. It's the Holy Trinity Catholic Church that says we aren't going to stand up for the Word of God. We're not going to stand up for the Catholic Church, even with the backing of our bishops. Why? Are they cowardly? Are they craven? Are they just more interested in having people think they're nice? Now, if you are a faithful believer of any stripe, again, I don't care, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, will you stand up for what your conscience, your strongly held religious beliefs mean, even if government says you're wrong? See, religious liberty isn't simply being allowed to worship as you see fit. It requires the action of exercising your religion, recognizing that the government does not get to control your conscience. It is illegal to turn the Holy Trinity Church is claiming that this is being turned into a political issue. Well, actually, it's the Holy Trinity Catholic Church that's doing it because they are refusing to enforce Roman Catholic doctrine. Because it's a political person. It's being targeted at politicians. It is the Holy Trinity Catholic Church, I believe, is turning this into a political issue. But it should be a warning to all of us to say, are we ready to stand on what our faith teaches us, even if it means that someone powerful like the President of the United States disagrees with us? Is willing to go out in public and tell us that we're wrong. What happens if the IRS comes after you? Now, you may have heard, I've talked about this before, but we had Stephen Martin, director of the Exempt Organizations Rulings and Agreements Division of the Internal Revenue Service, claim that prayer and Bible study is Republican, that it favors the Republican Party, and for that reason, they denied the tax-exempt status of a group called Christians Engaged. What happens when the IRS comes and threatens your 501c3? Now, there's a couple interesting things, and I used to be involved. I used to be in a diaconate in a church where we dealt with tax issues. And there's a couple interesting things that I need to make a point of. First of all, as I understand it, I'm not a tax lawyer, but as I understand it, a church does not need a 501c3 letter to be considered tax exempt. The simple fact it's a church means it's tax exempt. The 501c3 was designed for other organizations that are also doing not-for-profit work. Now, I know many churches have received a 501c3 letter. That's neither here nor there. That's their decision to make. But here's the rub. Will the church change its teachings to protect its tax-exempt status? I've already mentioned Johnson, who passed an amendment and has been used by many to claim that it is illegal for anyone in the church, anyone in the leadership of the church, to even mention politics. I've been in churches where, you know, again, mentioning things like abortion or same-sex marriage was considered taboo because they were considered political policies, not to be dealt with in the church. Well, as I've already shown, that's hogwash. It was the fact that the Black Robe Regiment talked about public policy, talked about taxation, that helped lead us to liberty. So here we have a single person claiming that, oh, guess what, you know, if it's biblically based, the fact that you're teaching what the Bible says, that means you're a Republican, you're partisan, therefore you do not deserve tax-exempt status. Well, apparently there was quite a bit of pushback on that because they've changed their mind. In a letter to Christians Engaged, the IRS says, quote, "We're pleased to tell you we determined you're exempt from federal income tax under Internal Revenue Code 501c3. Well, gee, it's nice of them to come around. Now, I don't know why Mr. Martin changed his mind. Could it have been the political backlash for a blatant attack on religious liberty? To equate the Bible with the Republican Party, one, it tells me two things. It tells me that there's such a conflation between politics and the Bible that anything that mentions something a politician says is suddenly considered politics. Well, again, the Bible came before the federal government. So in a matter of a question between if it's biblical and political, biblical wins. Biblical was there first, biblical wins. But you know what else it tells me? Well, it tells me that most people, at least in the leadership of the Democratic Party, are obviously godless heathens. Think about what Mr. Martin said. He said, if you teach the Bible what the Bible says, that is Republican. Well, what's the antithesis of that? Oh, if you teach an atheistic worldview or something unbiblical, that must be a Democratic worldview. So I was waiting for the letter from the IRS telling all of these atheist organizations that they were going to lose their tax-exempt status because, well, they're obviously Democratic. They favor the Democratic Party. Now, for whatever reason, I am glad that the IRS finally woke up. I don't know why. I'm just glad they did. But it shows the importance of we, the people, not sitting back and letting government do whatever it wants. It is up to us to hold them accountable. It is up to us to hold the IRS accountable. And who holds the IRS accountable? Well, the same people that hold the federal judiciary accountable. It starts with the House of Representatives, the people who represent us, the people we hire to exercise our power, our sovereign power for us in the federal government. Now, the reason I made the point between the IRS and the courts is we have an interesting example. See, at the beginning of the program, I talked about the Supreme Court's opinion in Catholic Social Services versus Philadelphia. Well, here we have the court deciding to not deal with another attack on religious liberty, this one coming out of the state of Washington. You see, the court has refused to hear the case of Darnell Stutzman against the state of Washington, attempting to force her to do flower arrangements for same-sex weddings. Force. This is not don't hurt somebody. This is compelling, compunction. It's the same thing we talked about with Jack Phillips and the Masterpiece Cake Shop. Can you be forced? Can government force you to do something? And the answer should be no. It should be an obvious no. There should be no ifs, ands, or buts about this. But once again, we see someone petitioning the government for a redress of grievance. We see horrible, illegal, unconstitutional opinions in lower courts. And we see the Supreme Court unwilling to pick it up. Now, again, I don't know why. Maybe they're too busy. Maybe they're just, maybe they don't think this is the right case. What I want to know is, where does Donnell Stutzman go for a redress of grievance now? If we lived in a free country, she'd be going to her sheriff. She would be showing him the bill, or her, the Bill of Rights, and requiring that they protect her rights. That's their job. Notice I said sheriff. I didn't say the courts. I didn't even say her state. I said she should go to the sheriff. The sheriff has sworn or affirmed to support the Constitution of the United States. That includes protecting her rights. Who's protecting her rights against the infringement of the state of Washington? So while Justice Thomas Alito and Gorsuch said they were willing to hear the case, remember those conservative justices that are supposed to be the stalwart of liberty? You know, Kavanaugh and Barrett? They didn't join the vote. They did not say, we should hear this case. That's right. Now, Kavanaugh has been on a downward decline. He's been on a decline, in my opinion, pretty much since he took the bench. I'm not real happy. He's very much a stare decisis. Let the opinion stand. I don't want to touch this. I was holding out a bit more hope for Amy Coney Barrett. She's written some decent opinions, but this is one in a series that I'm disappointed in. I'm disappointed that you have such a blatant a violation of conscience. This isn't just freedom of religion. This is freedom of speech. This is the ability to express yourself. This is government establishing a religion in violation of the Washington Constitution, by the way, not the First Amendment. This is government, the state of Washington, denying equal protection to someone for religious purposes. This is why I say we shouldn't depend on the courts to protect our liberty. They're really bad at it. And when they fail, a lot of people get hurt. We have Jack Phillips when the Supreme Court failed the last time in his last suit. We have Darnell Stutzman in Washington. And we are setting up for another one. See, New York State has these ridiculous public accommodation laws. These are illegal, unconstitutional. You do not give up your right to private property simply because you open for the public. Except in the tyrannical, despotic, communist state of New York, the true empire, they say, yes, oh, you open to the public, we get to tell you what you can do. And in fact, we can force you, we can compel you to act. So, Emily Carter Photography is suing in the Western District of New York. Cool. And what's interesting is there are now 14 states who have submitted amici briefs, in other words, friend of the court briefs, in support of Ms. Carpenter. Because she says it is wrong to be compelled to do what? She refuses to photograph same-sex wedding ceremonies. That's her religious beliefs. Forget religious. Her conscience says, no, I don't want to support these. I won't do it. The Empire of New York says, oh, yes, you will. Now she's suing the federal government. She's suing in federal court, I should say, for the right to live her life at liberty without being compelled by government. This is not a First Amendment issue. Remember, Congress shall make no law. This is not a congressional law. It is a Fifth Amendment and a 14th Amendment issue. And based on current jurisprudence, 14th Amendment is probably the better argument. It's real simple. It says, no state shall deprive you of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Period. End of story. Well, guess what? Ms. Carpenter has a property in her business. She has a property in her skills. She has a property in her abilities. And to tell her that she does not have control of her property, of her work, of her skills, of her body, is a deprivation without due process. Her rights have not been protected. Now, I'm glad to hear that states like Alabama, Arkansas, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia, and Nebraska have all offered to support her. Here's my question. I live in Tennessee. Someone asked Governor Lee, what are we doing to support her? What are we doing to support religious liberty throughout the country? And if your state is not on this list, what are you doing to get your state to support freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, the free exercise to prevent the tyranny of the absolute tyranny of the state believing it can compel someone to do something? This is an abomination. This is an atrocity. This is the type of stuff that led our founding fathers to fight a war, to declare independence and fight a war. What are we doing to stand up to this tyranny? Because as much as you look at this, if we are expecting the courts to be our saviors, we are not free. We are living in an oligarchy of men and women in black robes. If we are free, the answer is real simple. We do not consent to that power of the state of New York. Therefore, it is unjust. We will not allow it. I don't care what the governor says. I don't care what the state court says. I don't care what the federal court says. We, the people, established the state of New York. We, the people, established the United States of America. We, the people, consented to your just powers. And we have not consented to this, you petty tyrants. And to all the residents of the state of New York that are offended that she won't photograph same-sex weddings, get over yourself. You do not have the authority to tell someone else how to live any more than she has the authority to tell you to go to church on Sunday morning. If we live in a free country, we must allow others to live differently. And if you don't like it, stop pretending you want to live in freedom and liberty. What you want to do is you want to live in a totalitarian society as long as you are the one making the rules. That may be a bitter pill, but sadly, it's the truth. So what are you going to do about it? Well, that's what I want to know. What are you going to do about it? If we sit back and expect the courts to come save us, we've admitted we're no longer free. Now, I'm going to throw one more article in here, and this is interesting. This is actually an analysis piece I found on the Daily Caller. And it talks about how the scientific establishment has for years, I would say for decades, been acting less and less like scientists and more like priests. Even the idea that we have a scientific establishment. Does anybody understand what science is? It's the pursuit of knowledge without bias. The whole scientific process is, I think something is true, let me test it, I analyze the results of the test, and then I modify my assumptions based on what happened. In other words, I'm seeking truth. Yet what do we have? We have the scientific consensus where any disagreement with what, quote unquote, the science says is considered heresy. People say there's settled science. There is no such thing. It is an oxymoron. Emphasis on moron. Science is never settled. Compare what's been coming out of Fauci's mouth and the CDC director and all of these pundits and politicians saying the science is settled. You must, you know, this is the fact, and any challenge to that must be destroyed. Shut up. You know, Twitter banning people who have opinions about vaccines or data about vaccines or about where the virus came from. That's not science, folks. That's a religion. That's a belief system that must be followed. It's no different than what they did to Newton and Galileo and other scientists that were labeled as heretics for not following the current orthodoxy. This is an establishment of religion, scientism. And the high priests are called scientists. And dissent is not allowed. And since the government is spending billions and billions of dollars educating your children into this religion, they have established a religion. Think about that as you think about religious liberty. It's, yes, it's the free exercise of religion, but it's also government not establishing a religion. Before I go, I do want to remind you of a couple things. We're getting closer and closer to the first events in the Knowing Your Rights tour. Please head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. Find out what the tour is going to be about. I'm teaching people about rights. How do you recognize a right? How do you understand a right? And most importantly, how do you recognize when it's being violated and how do you defend and assert it? So if you go to the site, you'll find the details. You'll find out where I'm speaking. I'd love to meet you. If I'm not coming to a city near you, please fill out the form. I would love to come talk to you as well. This is part of what I do. This is part of the process for the Constitution Study. I also hope you'll head over to constitutionscholars.com, find other patriots, other constitutional scholars, people who want to read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation to be free. Most of all, I want to ask you to share this episode, share the podcast when it comes out. Let other people know about this program and about all the other great programs on America Out Loud Talk Radio. News, information, happenings, they're all coming here and you have access to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on the America Out Loud app. You can also find us on iHeartRadio. You know, it's talking about science and sciences. Let's look at the facts and see if our assumption matches the facts. Well, that's what you can do here. You can share the gift of a scientific analysis of the Constitution, of your rights, of your liberties, by sharing this program and the other work done at the Constitution Study and on America Out Loud. So please do that. It's a great gift to share with friends and family. Hey, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a rating and subscribe. It helps other people find me there. So please stand your ground for rights and for liberty and join me next time on the Constitution Study.
Hey, they'll stay out of jail.